Chapter 7. Resonance. Recently, on a forum for scientists, laypeople, and healthcare professionals who question the safety and efficacy of vaccinations, in other words, a forum for people who question the practices of conventional medicine, a professional scientist made the following comment when one of the members pointed out that Koch's postulates had never been met for even a single viral or bacterial disease. She said, "No virologist of any note took any notice of Koch's postulates ever." The comment says a lot about how virologists currently think, as Koch's postulates are what anyone with common sense would use to prove that a microorganism causes disease, isolate the organism from a sick animal or human and then introduce it into a healthy animal or human to see whether it causes disease. In a sane world, Koch's postulates are not something one can discard. In the mid-20th century, virologists apparently came to a fork in the road. With repeated failures to satisfy Koch's or Rivers' postulates, it became obvious that viruses don't cause disease. The scientists could either admit this and all become postmen, butchers, and greengrocers, in other words get honest jobs, or they could proclaim that they changed the rules of logic, hope no one would notice, and possibly get fabulously wealthy and powerful from patents on antiviral medications and vaccines. It's actually understandable that they took a flyer and chose the second route. Tragically, this farce worked, and the world became a much worse place for living beings to inhabit. The scientist quoted above later said, "Polio alone revealed to them that out of every 1,000 people infected, around 10 would show signs of illness and one would become paralyzed. Even the old works on Neisseria, a type of bacteria said to cause meningitis and syphilis, from the old days, showed conclusively that the bacteria was carried extensively and routinely and that only around 1 in 100,000 would actually have clinical meningococcal disease presentation. So to toss in Koch's postulate in order to dismiss an article is chasing an unrelated goose down another garden path." Suppose a professor theorizes that spraying a gentle stream of water, such as a shower, on people would kill them. To test the theory, 100 people are sprayed. No one is harmed. Most people would conclude the theory was incorrect and spraying water on people, in fact, doesn't kill anyone. But some researchers would persist. They would test 1,000 people, then 50,000. Finally, by chance, one subject dies. Of course, no honest or sane person would keep doing this experiment this long, but if it were done, the obvious question to ask would be whether something else happened to the person to kill him, as it obviously couldn't have been the water. Maybe he slipped in the shower, hit his head, and died. Or maybe he had an aneurysm in his brain, which due to a fight with his wife right before being sprayed, happened to burst, or maybe he foolishly decided to spray the water into his airway to wash his dirty lungs. In any case, the cause of his demise is clearly not the spraying of water, and the researchers would need to do an individual investigation to find out what had really happened. For a prominent alternative leader not to understand the point of Koch's postulates and write this in a public forum is cause for despair. One can only conclude that the depth of the delusion in the biological sciences is so deep that even scientists supposedly dedicating their lives to uncovering one aspect of the delusion can't step out of the whole delusion and see things clearly. Another online statement by a prominent scientist goes even further. "Koch's postulate is completely wrong and irrelevant in our modern understanding of disease-causing agents. That is a set of principles developed in 1884. It was 10 years before viruses were even discovered, and over 65 years before the immune system was discovered, and of course 115 years before the microbiome was understood. Most of the tenets of Koch's postulates are wrong. Many well-known infectious agents don't fit it. If any doctor or scientist is out there using Koch's postulate as proof that this COV2 is not real, turn away because they have no idea they are talking about. Just like we moved away from the early 1600s geocentric model of the solar system, we have to move away from Koch's postulates. This is like saying that because Newton formulated the laws of gravity over 300 years ago, they are now out of date and it's safe to jump off tall buildings. A remaining question is how to explain measles parties and sexually transmitted diseases (STDs) like herpes. Investigating these phenomena leads to some interesting conclusions about the nature of life. To understand what seems to be the contagious nature of childhood diseases like measles, mumps, and chicken pox, or STDs like herpes, gonorrhea, or syphilis, one must investigate the phenomena of resonance. If one plucks a string tuned to a certain frequency, the vibrations of the string will cause a second string tuned to the same frequency to vibrate and sound at the same frequency. The two strings are not touching, the connection is through a sound wave that travels between the strings. When confronted with the question of, what is a virus, one could easily ask that question about anything in nature. We could say that a virus is made of chemicals, proteins, nucleic acids, minerals, lipids, etc. But what are these chemicals made of? They are made of atoms, such as sulfur, oxygen, and carbon. Atoms are made of protons and neutrons in a nucleus and electrons circling around the nucleus, sort of like the sun with the planets circling around it. And as in the solar system, 99.999% of this atom is space, that is, it seems to be nothing. This presents an obvious dilemma. How is it possible that this particle, which is made almost entirely of nothing, creates an entity we call a virus, or a foot or a chair, all of which seem solid? The only conclusion anyone of integrity can make is that we simply have no idea how this works. To make matters even worse, the top dogs of the science world, the physicists, tell us that all this stuff on Earth can exist either as a space-filling particle or as a wave, which has no physical presence at all. In other words, both humans and viruses are made of waves of energy that have no discernible physical presence. How a collection of waves can write a book on viruses is anyone's guess, but the fact that this occurs can't be disputed. The only rational conclusion anyone can come to is that physical reality is a kind of energy or wave pattern that crystallizes as physical reality under certain conditions. We and everything in the universe seem to participate in this dance of wave-particle manifestation. With this understanding, let's turn to the results of a series of experiments carried out by a virologist named Luc Montagnier. Montagnier is credited with claiming to discover that the HIV virus causes AIDS. He also claims that the COVID virus is man-made. What he found can help us craft a realistic theory explaining the mystery of childhood illnesses like measles and STDs, which appear to be contagious, and also proves that even the misguided can sometimes redeem themselves. We need to be cautious about applying his findings too broadly. The vast majority of illness that seems to be contagious is in reality just people exposed to similar toxins or suffering from the same nutritional deficiencies. Hiroshima was not contagious, Chernobyl spread throughout Europe, but it was neither contagious nor caused by a virus. Sailors all getting sick on the same ship were not the victims of a virus. The likely explanation is that they all had a vitamin C deficiency called scurvy. Young people at college exposed to horrible food, severe psychological stress, and intense binge alcohol use are affected by toxins, not some elusive virus. After starvation and toxicity are accounted for, we can admit that some diseases can be spread by a kind of energetic resonance as predicted by a careful and accurate study of the nature of physical stuff, carried out by Luc Montagnier. Here's how the experiment goes. First, one puts DNA or RNA in water, beaker 1. Then one puts a collection of nucleic acids, the chemicals that make up the DNA and RNA, in a separate water beaker, beaker 2, in another part of the room. Then one introduces an energy source, such as UV or infrared light, and shines that on beaker 1, which contains the formed DNA or RNA. In time, the exact same sequence of DNA or RNA will form out of the raw materials in beaker 2. There is no possibility of physical connection between the two beakers. The only conclusion one can draw from this simple experiment is that the DNA or RNA in the first beaker has a resonance energy picked up by the second beaker. This resonance energy then becomes the blueprint for the formation of the identical piece of DNA or RNA in the second beaker. This revolutionary experiment is clear and simple, and repeatable. This formation of DNA or RNA in the second beaker can happen only if both beakers have water in them. Without water, no resonance is possible. Even in our string example, it is the water vapor in the air that is resonating. When one applies this discovery to viruses or exosomes said to cause measles, chicken pox, or herpes, it is possible that since these particles called viruses or exosomes are simply packages of DNA or RNA, they emit their own resonant frequencies. In a way not yet determined, each frequency creates an expression that we call a disease. However, the frequency will create what we call illness only if there is a purpose or reason for the illness. Chicken pox is a universal way for children to live a long life. Children who experience chickenpox have less disease and especially less cancer than do children who haven't had chickenpox. The same holds for measles, mumps, and most childhood infectious diseases. Why do measles and chickenpox seem to be infectious? One child puts out the message through exosomes that now is time to go through the detoxifying experience called chickenpox. Other children in their home or class or town receive the message and begin the same detoxification experience. In the end, the children are all better off for having sung together. With an illness like herpes, resonance may also be at play. Also, a collagen deficiency may contribute to the genital irritations in patients with herpes and other STDs. So when two people come together in the highly charged act of sex, a situation in which this resonance acts strongly, it is no surprise that the couple might resonate together and create identical DNA or RNA, in a manner similar to what occurred in the beaker. To a virologist, this looks like the appearance of a new contagious virus. To a realistic observer, it is two people forging an intimate genetic connection. This observation, rather than proving contagion, teaches us about the mystery we call life. It teaches us again that the materialistic conception of the Wiley attack virus is an impoverished, inaccurate view of the world. And it teaches us to forego simplistic explanations and look into the deepest mysteries of life if we are to create a world of health and freedom. The discoveries about the resonant properties of genetic material can also help us explain how humans and animals adjust to new situations, a new toxin or new electromagnetic frequencies, not by competition and survival of the fittest but through the harmonizing of shared experience. Imagine a situation where the human community is confronted with a new toxin. The new toxin can be neutralized only by an enzyme that is not usually made by human beings. But one member of the community has a randomly generated mutation that allows her, and only her, to make the toxin neutralizing enzyme. She does well, whereas others sicken and some die because this randomly generated mutation gives her an adaptive advantage. According to the theory of genetic mutation and natural selection, her genes will slowly spread throughout the population. But what if she is a 60-year-old postmenopausal woman, or a man who does not have children? Then the helpful gene would die out. If we're lucky, the carrier of the gene will be a 30-year-old man about to get married. He and his wife have 6 children with 3 carrying the autosomal dominant mutation. One of those 3 dies in a car crash, the other becomes sterile following a Gardasil vaccine, and the third passes the adaptive gene on to her 2 children. In 10,000 years, that adaptive gene will have spread throughout the population through natural selection. Unfortunately, the toxin either has killed everyone off by then or is long gone, so the mutation is useless. It's clear that the theory of natural selection following random mutations cannot explain how humans and animals adapt to new situations in time for these mutations to be useful. So how do we adapt? Our threatened cells produce exosomes containing DNA and RNA, which have a unique resonance. The pattern of this genetic material will quickly pass to others through resonance, especially if they are in close contact. This is the role of viruses in nature. They are physical resonance forms of genetic material that code for changes happening in the environment. They provide real-time genetic adaption. It's a totally ingenious system that we have missed by assuming that viruses are hostile and dangerous. A war on viruses is nothing more than a war on the forward evolution of humanity.